This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. Being a best-kept secret in an industry can be deadly for a company, but it's worked out okay for Neil Farr and his Leicester, England company Working Solutions, which trades under the brand name Acquire Digital. For 20 years now, the company has been developing a meaty, diverse software platform that will do all the core aspects of digital signage, but also allows for a lot of customization. Farr admits he and his team have not been all that good about getting the name out there in the industry, but it hasn't hurt them much. Acquire has several high-profile clients and jobs, like an amazing three-dimensional LED pylon on the Las Vegas Strip. And a lot of business just comes in based on references from happy clients and partners. We caught up recently via Skype, and Farr walked me through the history of the company, what's different about what they do and offer, and what's coming with technology that keeps him excited about the business. You have, I think, the most diverse set of clients and jobs I've seen in this business. You're working with all kinds of different people. How did that happen?
I wouldn't say through hard work, but it's it probably isn't. I was just talking to somebody yesterday. They're starting a business. One of the things, if you're a small business owner looking for investment, is the investor will normally say, stop scattergunning, stop chasing after all the different deals. In fact, what we set out to develop many years ago was a platform that could be as flexible as possible. I hate to use the phrase digital signage because it's been now so misused, and now people begin to use the word, which CMS are you using? But our digital technology is probably a better way of saying it. It allows us to put pictures on screens or text on screens or data. And therefore, we've been recommended by a whole variety of different people to say, can this technology be used for this? And we generally turn around and say yes, because it can. There are so many examples where, you know, over the years, nearly 20 years, we've had people who have been using an existing technology in a vertical marketplace. So say, I don't know, transport information systems like a FITS display, where traditional suppliers have been, you know, blindfolded effectively to that is the only thing they make, and therefore that's the only thing they sell. So financially, they have to make a lot more money because they're not going to make as many sales. We come in and disrupt that by coming in and saying, well, it's just displaying data on the screen, and we have abilities to animate the data on in a better way maybe than traditional. So we can use it. That, coupled with a variety of different types of technology we've had access to over the years, from the fact we started with kiosks and interactive solutions through to now LED screens and such like, has enabled us to also bring in those respective weird things and use them in really cool ways, so that people can be, you know, as they walk up to an interactive kiosk which is displaying digital signage, the system can detect that through an ultrasonic sensor and then change that to an interactive touchscreen solution that they may be using. So trying to use the technology in cool and amazing ways is one of the things the guys here love doing. And of course, we have a whole series of geeks working for us that they like playing with technology, so it always works out.
Right. Let's talk about the company. You started it 20 years ago as Working Solutions. And yes. Did you start it with the idea of you were going to get into a business that was putting pictures on screens, or were you going off in a different direction and this kind of evolved?
Honestly, where we came from was, so prior to starting Working Solutions 20 years ago, I'd started a company with a partner in an AV industry. So we were doing corporate videos and the such like, and we were approached in the early 90s to do a level of interaction. And we said, oh, yeah, we can do some slideshow kind of things. This is in the days before PowerPoint, of course. And if we put a touchscreen on the front of that, we can do interaction as well. And in those days, there was a computer called the Amiga computer. Yeah. And it was great because, you know, you could just connect it to a television set or a higher resolution monitor and it display content. And there was a really cool package out in those days called Scala, which obviously everybody now knows. And to be honest, we were one of the prime partners of Scala here in the UK at the time, a company called Communicate I was working for. And we started using it, but as Commodore kind of screwed up and, you know, they closed up, Scala started to migrate over to the PC platform. And to be honest, although we were using it, we thought we could do better, not necessarily with the creative things, because they did some amazing things in those days in the Amiga. But when they migrated to the PC, they kind of had to start again. So we started building a technology when I started working solutions that enabled you to control, in those days, again, interactive kiosks was our thing, and be able to take rich media and not only present it, but actually deliver it to the remote end and guarantee that, you know, it's working and tell you if it isn't. So we wanted to build that platform in those days. That then became, in the early 2000s, we got involved in some very early digital signage uses of the technology, and we then started adding extra digital signage functionality to the system. So the scheduling got beefed up. Instead of being effectively a screensaver, there's quite advanced scheduling put into it, and synchronization, and, you know, related to your previous question, features were added into the system as different requirements came about. But in essence, what we wanted is to create a platform that could be used for a multitude of uses without having to redevelop it from the ground up each time. It was supposed to be a kind of a scaffold or a base platform to work from, and then with the ability to personalize around the outside. Uh-huh. So I don't know if that fully answered your question, but yeah, that was the case of what we wanted to do. And the fact that digital signage became this thing, and this adapted to it so well that, in fact, yes, we can play videos in sequence and deliver them through a content delivery network quite easily. Actually, it doesn't matter what it was used for, it's still essentially digital signage as it is today.
So how, way back then, were you describing it when you went into a meeting with prospective clients? How did you sell this at this point, and what kind of reaction were you getting?
It's strange. The way we work isn't necessarily to the end client. We tend to work with partners. So we deliver, obviously, you know, the elements of the creative, elements of the delivery platform, elements of the application itself. But we were generally brought into the client with a partner. But what we'd do is work with the partner to work out what the client's problem was, or what we could go in and sell the client on. And we weren't selling digital signage, and even to this day, we don't really sell digital signage. What we do is we tend to sell a solution for their problems. So, for instance, as an example, I'll use a travel example again. If somebody wanted to show train information, we would turn around to them and say, look, as a customer using the train service, we find it really annoying that we don't know what part of the platform to stand on, or, you know, is this train very busy or quiet, or is there a delay that I might expect to get in the future? But if the information is available, because we know it is, it's available on different services, maybe we can present this in a different way. So we're not selling the fact we're selling a screen. We're not selling a digital signage package. We're selling them on a dream and an idea that, in this case, would show the customers of the transport organization, you know, extra information that would help them have a better experience. And if we can get the client on board with that, the fact we're using this technology, which, you know, the industry is now known as digital signage, yeah, it makes no difference to them. At the same time, during that time, you know, so the early 2000s, there was a whole myriad of different names used to describe digital signage.
Oh, yeah.
That everybody on their dog jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, we need to have a screen in the store, we need to have a screen for this. And there was actually an easy wave to ride if you wanted to, of selling digital signage as digital signage, because everybody wanted it. I think the phrase keeping up with Joneses is a very British phrase, but describes it quite well. And again, that's still relatively true today. And certainly in the 2000s, there was a lot of people who decided to do this, but without understanding why they were doing it. And a lot of the solutions failed, not technically, but because, you know, maybe the content wasn't updated, or other services weren't there. So yes, we were able to sell in some unique solutions. We did one of the biggest or well-known rollouts possibly in the 2000s was the iView network, which was across many hairdressing salons across the UK.
Right.
And there was a company in those days called Digital View who had initially been used to do some of these. The client wanted to do a whole load of extra things that the Digital View hardware couldn't do at the time. And luckily, we were able to do all that, and we won that job, and that led on to other things, and other things led on to other things. In fact, it rolled out across the US as well for a period. But that enabled us to, you know, showcase and showcase the technology in use in a very public and accessible area, and to demonstrate the specific requirements of the client, we were able to deliver, which enabled us to then go to somebody who wanted digital signage and say, this is what we did for this client, this is what we could do for you. And makes it a little bit easier to sell, I guess, if we do that.
It's a bit counter to how a lot of companies sell, where they're selling on the basis of numbers of licenses, and it's a fairly standardized offer in terms of what it can do, versus what you're talking about right from the early days is selling a custom solution, which tends to amount to extra work, extra billing, and extra cost, obviously, for the end user. But because you're developing a solution, they're more open to that, or you're realizing a solution.
Yeah, it works in two ways. So if we split down the middle for a second, when you started, you said we started as Working Solutions. In fact, we are still known as Working Solutions. We have a product called Acquire. Okay. So to make it easier, we call ourselves Acquire. The reason being is we still do sell licenses. So as you say, quantity, like the Ivy rollout, here's a technology. It does everything it needs to do. How many licenses you want? That's the technology that we tend to sell. We have a number of content management systems. We have a number of player technologies, and we can just sell a license and a service to support that. We also, however, uniquely, I guess, have the ability to create custom features without redeveloping the solution from the ground up. So the iView solution, for instance, in their case, the only thing I think they had to have customized was some custom reports for their unique use of the system. They required remote deployment technology. They needed the remote deployment technology to manage through what we call a media server, or an edge server, as people call them, because they had lots and lots of single players within a single location, and they wanted to have synchronization. So they were playing audio and a constantly changing playlist. So they had, if they had 35 different players all playing audio out of sequence, it would sound like a cacophony. So they had to have that, you know, frame accurate synchronization for that. So luckily, we had all those features available. So it was just a case of selling the licenses and, you know, any associated services like assistance with building images and things. But we also have the ability to take the technology, and if a client does require something unique, and that could be just a little plugin that connects to their data source that controls the player's triggers, because obviously everyone's different data sources may be different, or it could be that somebody wants to build a whole custom system, or what we're finding more and more clients asking for now is a customized CMS. So we have, as an example, you know, all the content delivery and the ability to schedule content and everything else that's required. But in fact, their users are maybe store managers or something like this, who they don't want to talk about content and scheduling and correct media formats and things. They just want to be able to say, show the advert today, please, or, you know, tell a message to say, sorry about, but we're closing early. And in that case, a little simple website in the front is a little bit of customization, but we don't need to do it. It could be, you know, our partner or the end client themselves. So that's that custom level we can also add to the solution.
Right. So it looks like you have kind of a mothership solution, and then a cloud-based version, and then some other ones?
Correct. Yeah. So CMS-wise, we have there's actually three different cloud-based solutions, essentially. One's for advertising management, one's for just general scheduling. And as you say, the mothership kind of one, the more advanced one, we tend to find more of, you know, partners or super users would use, because that allows you to build up levels of interactivity or much more in-depth things, which you can still make a template for and make people allow people to, you know, then schedule that content using one of the online solutions if you want. And of course, as I said, we have customization capability, which is through an API that people can develop themselves, or we can do it for them.
Right.
And then player wise, we have, again, depending on which CMS platform of ours you use, we don't have to use an Acquire player. So we do have compatibility with a number of other players, like, you know, Samsung's Tizen or Android players and Brightsign players and so on. All that through the same CMS. But our own player technology, which is a Windows-based one, related to the previous question to a certain extent as well, we have a very simple player which is, you know, plays content as many other player technologies do. And that for rollout capabilities, purchasing just a single license would make sense because, you know, it's quantity, low cost, competing with everything else that goes out there and plays videos in sequence on a playlist. However, we also have the more advanced player technology, which allows us to, you know, interact with that content in a three-dimensional way. So it's ideal for the more advanced technologies. Again, control from the same, you know, core CMS technologies or a custom one as well, enabling you to do things like the recent installation on the Strip in Vegas. We've done the big 86-foot three-dimensional pylon, or screens that rotate around and access to switch between portrait and landscape, or those the more advanced things where we're animating content across a large format screen that's higher resolution than, say, even a 4K screen, and canvases and such like. So, yeah, we've got a whole breadth of different technologies, unfortunately, but yes, they do work from a license model essentially. But the more unique things, usually there's more handholding required to bring the technology and the creative together, and that's where we can also fit in as the working solutions brand, for want of a better word, with our experience of the 20 years.
Right. So, what do you and your team prefer to work on? I mean, you mentioned there are so many choices you can work on: a system on chip, you can work on Android players, Windows, Linux. Is there, if you are able to work with a client and they say, what do you recommend? What are you ideally going to give them, and how's that going to set up for them?
Okay. So again, we tend to listen to what the client's asking for and try and pitch what's probably most appropriate for them, even if it makes us less money. The reason being, recently I've just provided some pricing out to a client who wants to have a bank of 18 screens, often playing individual content, sometimes fully synchronized together. I could have supplied him, you know, 8 individual player licenses to run on 8 individual devices, but in that scenario, it actually makes better sense for them to spend a little bit more on a single computer and have an 8 output graphics card, effectively, with one player license. So I don't make any money off hardware, of course, so, you know, it makes us less money. But to fully answer your question, we've developed things using iOS and Apple technologies. We've done Android. We've done the tires and the sock and stuff like this. They're all great technologies, but we often find that there is a limitation, generally through the operating systems of these things, which can be sometimes a little restrictive. The great question that always gets asked is, is it a Windows platform? Yes, it is. And the reason we built that from day one as a predominantly Windows platform was because of still nowadays around about 70 to 80% of the world still runs on a Microsoft Windows platform. Albeit some of these are probably very old now. And because of that, we tend to find most technology gets developed for that first. So it gives us the largest user base that we can sell into, the largest ability to bring in other pieces of technology as necessary, largest security levels and, you know, capabilities of the platform, essentially. So we can develop for custom things for clients or use some off-the-shelf things, but often this gives us the most flexibility as a Windows platform. Mm.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
So I'm curious, though, for things like Android and system on chip, the Android bubbled up and there were so many systems that developed an Android option, and that seems to have petered out to some degree at least. And system on chip has come along, and most of the major display manufacturers have some, or in cases like Samsung, pretty much all of their product on system on chip. Is it there? Is it good enough to use? And where does it stop? Where wouldn't you use it?
Where wouldn't you use it? I would say, again, the phrase digital signage has been bandied around so many different things, from one end, the giant LED screens that, you know, in the middle of Times Square, down to the very lowest end, you know, just something locally playing a piece of content in another called gym, for instance, and anywhere in between. So it's very hard to define, but I would say you have to match the capabilities of the platform with your requirements. But the problem with Android, you're quite right, Android player technology, people all jumped on it from the point of view of low cost. If you're rolling out thousands of screens, for instance, having a, you know, even if it's a Windows, say Windows 10 Enterprise license, which is, I don't know, $50 or $60, for instance, and the hardware behind that, you're still finding yourself a little bit more expensive than an equivalent Android stick or little mini device. But what's actually been discovered, as you say, it's dropped off quite a bit because people are realizing that there's always a new version of Android out. A lot of the lower cost Android technology tends to be behind the times. So maybe Android version 4.x, which is so many versions behind, it probably has potentially security risks involved as well. So when you then come to the larger organizations or the larger rollouts where you want to roll out 1,000 units to like a convenience store that's nationwide, their IT infrastructure won't allow it on the network. So therefore, how do you update it? Because of the security risks. So that can be an issue. Similarly, people have moved to devices that have already got, like you say, system on chip. So LG with the OS, WebOS stuff, Samsung with the older technology and the new Tizen-based technologies. They're great for displaying content and playlists. In fact, we built a Tizen player, but recently for the ISE show last year, we also developed a interactive touchscreen application using the Tizen native application capabilities. They're all great, but then we found that the interactive application would require, for instance, a credit card payment. The feature's not available. So we can't build it because it's an OS we have no control over. So in that case, although the application was built, we've had to rebuild it using a different platform because we can't control that level end. So if I'm putting screens on a wall and want to display content in a playlist, I can control how that playlist changes from the head end, the CMS end, and I can deliver that to any of those platforms. But when we start wanting to bring in, say, live data feeds, yes, I could recreate a video up at the head end and then republish it down to the local end if the player has no method of connecting to that live data source. But actually, that's not the most optimal way to do it. We would therefore say, you know, bring in like a Windows player or something similar.
Right.
And the same with, you know, sometimes people want to create some really cool visual effects. So, you know, weird shaped LEDs or video walls and canvases that are fully in sync. And in those cases, some of the platforms say they'll synchronize and do some of the things, but actually when you watch it, certainly with synchronization, we've seen a myriad of times where, you know, the screens catch up a few frames later, for instance. So again, using all the options of, you know, a more powerful computer with multiple outputs or a, you know, multiple synchronized players together, which we know will sync frame accurately, will suffice instead.
Much of the digital signage industry in the UK seems to be hived around London, and I guess a lot of business in general is hived around London. But you guys are, what, a couple hours north in Leicester?
Yeah, well guessed. A lot of people in the UK don't live in London, although a lot of people in America think we do. But yeah, there is actually an interesting grouping of places. So central London, there's a lot of media industry types around. So yes, the industry has certainly centered around there. But areas such as Bristol and Manchester are also strong areas as well. Just down the road, down the M3 from London, about an hour away, is where Microsoft and some of the technology people are headquartered. Mm-hmm. So we're dead center in the country. So I like to think of the center of the universe, but in reality, yeah, it's not. But nowadays with technology, you know, I'm on a call to you on the other side of the world. You know, technology has opened up a lot of things, and it means that at least I don't have to speak with a London accent, but I can still do work.
Is it easier to recruit and hang on to talent when I suspect the cost of living in Leicester versus London is markedly different?
Yeah, as you say, that the cost of living versus the wages and so on will obviously differ a little bit. But Leicester is actually just on the edge of the commute zone to London. So, you know, train journey is about 1 hour away now, so people can traverse relatively easily. And in fact, you know, I've got some quite good talent here. Some people here from France and Greece work for me actually here. We don't outsource anything. It's been, you know, we didn't even consider that, as we've heard the horror stories of sometimes routing outside to third-party agencies sometimes, who almost keep control over everything, so we can guarantee the quality of the workmanship. But yeah, you know, people come here from all over the world and you know, join us, some for longer than others, but you know, our average, I think, is working on about 10 to 12 years of our employees, so it's quite good.
How many people do you have?
So we have 32 people at the moment. So relatively small company, but that's the reason why we started at the start of using partners, because obviously we don't know the local lingo quite so well, ways of working and things. So obviously we've got offices in the US, we've got a couple of people working out of there, and we have some people working out of a partner organization over in Macau near China. We're headquartered in the UK, but we're dealing with people across Europe, people in the US, people over in China. And without having those local people who know how to deal with the local currency, local people, local level of experience and expertise as well, that's how we've always tried to drive it.
So you've got right. Clients all over the world, some pretty high-profile ones. You've got Simon in the US, and you mentioned the big LED sign on the Las Vegas trip. How did you end up working with them?
So we've got a variety of high value clients. Quite often it's through recommendation. One of the things that we are terrible at doing is either marketing or selling ourselves. Some of our clients actually, in fact, three of them said we're the world's best kept secret. I think they want to keep it that way. I'm not sure. But through, yeah, all of our sales over the last 20 years or so have been through recommendations and word of mouth and clients, you know, coming back to us. So, yeah, Simon luckily was a opportunity pretty much 2 years ago where we had a partner in the US join us through recommendation. And they came to us and said, hey, we've been recommended by ScreenFeed that you guys know what you're doing. And we want to come and meet you. They came over and met with us. And then they said, well, they're working actively on a client who is Simon. So Gable, the client, we're our partner. Simon came along and sort of met with us as well over here in the UK. And we demonstrated what we were able to do. And from that point of view, we were able to get both the partner on board and the client directly to create a network of wayfinding technology in their shopping malls and large format LED screens and advertising screens across their estate. That's continuing to roll out now. But about 1 year ago, because of what we'd done and quality of work, they'd come to us and said, for the, I think it's their 25th anniversary, the Forum Shops on the Strip in Vegas, they were looking to do something amazing and could we work with them on achieving something. So we helped design, plan, and manage that. And then basically they brought in the respective partners to build the sign itself and attach the LEDs to it and network it all together. And then we basically came along and assisted them to create it's a pretty wow factor kind of technology. They got the creatives involved. We worked with the creatives to show them some of the technologies they could use to do live 3D mapping of the screen, so they didn't have to keep just two flat faces. It's got three-dimensional aspects to it. And also things like transparent video overlays to hide the transitions between one piece of the playlist and the next. So it's a one continuously moving piece of content, essentially. And from all that, it grew and grew and grew. So in reality, it was just through the initial recommendation through to the proof that we could do what we talk about. And then for them, once they've built enough confidence in what we're able to do, to kind of almost give us free rein to do it. We're still rolling things out like that for the moment. And we do the same thing with other clients. So again, clients in the UK, clients across Europe, where they've come to us, again, generally through recommendations or from things that we've done. They've seen maybe a press release that somebody's done and mentioned us in. And, you know, we've proven to them we know what their problems are and we can solve them or, you know, make things better for them.
Is that your kind of signature client, the one, if you get into conversation with a prospect and they say, who do you work with, you'll rattle them off? Or is there another one or two two clients and portfolios that you tend to talk about?
To be honest, when we go in to see a client, we have so many different uses of the technology. We do tend to name drop occasionally, but we tend to also demonstrate, you know, through videos and photographs of installs we've done that tend to be in that vertical marketplace or in that sector, to give the client the feel that actually, you know, we're not just showing a piece of technology that may be used in shopping malls when they're talking about transport systems or sort of, you know, shelf edge screens, things like this. If we can demonstrate to them we've been there, done that, it gives them a bit more of a comfort factor. So yes, we do mention some of the larger names, some, you know, people like Sony, Virgin Media, Wind, NatWest, National North, if you can. But yes, Simon is a good one. It's a strong one for us because it's easily visible. But at the same time, we're kind of well known for other things, but people don't necessarily know it's us. But if we can show to them, this is what we've done. So driving screens for, you know, sporting events and venues, such as the pitch side advertising screens for most of the football in the UK, doing advertising screens on and information screens on the side of roads, just using LED screens, doing artistic things. If we can show that, then if we can attach the some relevance to what the client is we're talking to them about and demonstrating, hey, you want to do synchronization in that way, but look at what we've done for other people. It tends to be just visually they get that. They don't really need to know about the name of the client. It's more about what we can actually do for them.
So is it Acquire software that's driving the sideline boards at King Power Stadium?
Yes, but I can't say that. So it is King Power is one of the ones that's there, but yeah, it's we have partners that do different things. So yes, that is one of the stadiums that have got it in King Power in Leicester.
So people listening who have no idea what I just asked them, that Leicester City FC is a team in the Premier League, and they won the championship very surprisingly a couple of years ago.
Correct. Yes, we're actually on the map finally.
Yes. So is there, just last question, going forward, is there a piece of technology or development that you guys are doing that are you seeing out there that gets you excited, gets you motivated to get into work and start doing things?
That's an interesting question. Yes, we've got, okay, we're in the middle of updating our core engine technology. Since Windows 8, but actually since Windows 10 days, there have been some great advances in the technology used to display visuals on screens. So from a purely digital signage in inverted commas concept, we have been working quite hard on creating, like the three-dimensional screen on the strip, the engine to drive that, being able to move a live video around in three dimensions with hardly any CPU usage across multiple video outputs, and, you know, a myriad of things gives so much capability that where LED screens certainly have found it's enabling us to paint walls with visuals in an amazing way. So wrapping content around and doing things like that. Wow. Didn't explain it very well, but essentially with the newer technology, the lower cost LED screens, the newer visual technology like the large format LCD screens and such like, having the ability to, you know, to actually engage with people is just amazing with what you can do visually on the screen. If you can get the story right to get them to engage, so using sensors and cameras to identify people walking up to the screen and reacting to them, for instance, or having the screen, you know, showing appropriate content is great. And the fact that you can actually make what we thought was actually a wall, you know, suddenly change and become something else, for instance, and that wall's different shapes. Those sort of things can be amazing and stick in people's minds quite well. This is where the technology, I think, is going to a certain extent, as, you know, like, you know, Back to the Future, where, you know, everything was visually, you know, LEDs everywhere and three-dimensional. So that sort of technology is a big one. Finding more and more that clients don't want to use an off-the-shelf content management system, because it means that they need to learn a specific CMS, and so do their users. And in reality, the CMS might be great. They might have chosen one that's perfect for them, but in, you know, a year or so's time, out of maybe their 3 to 5 year lifespan, they've realized that it's restrictive and, you know, it's prevented them from getting where they need to be. So we're finding more and more clients coming to us and saying, can you create a custom CMS that gives a walled garden approach to allowing people to do things and talk to their own respective mannerisms and colloquialisms? So that's happening a lot. And also, one of the biggest issues at the moment is security of these sort of technologies. Although digital signage has been around for years, it's only recently become a bit of an under attack thing from hackers. There are a lot of incidents recently where technology has been hacked and untoward messaging put on the screens. Again, within our technology, we put stuff in there, but we're just enhancing. We have a separate product as well, which we sell for people who've got their own CMS technology. We're just doing some enhancements onto that to bring it up to speed a bit more. But there's a lot of risk involved in digital signage and things nowadays as well. So having that security aspect to it is an important part.
All right, Neil, thank you very much for spending the time with me.
No problem. My pleasure.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.